a detective's prayer. Blessed be the truly unwise, for they bring hope to those obligated to pursue them. Blessed be those of dim understanding, for by their very ignorance they bring light to those who labour in darkness. Blessed be Dennis Walls, for though he believes otherwise, he is cooperating fully in the campaign to put him in prison for the month-old murder of Karen Rennie Smith, the cab driver beaten to death in northwest Baltimore. "This house right here," says Eddie Brown. "Next one." Brown nods, and Walls tries to open the back door of the Cavalier. The detective sitting next to him in the rear seat reaches over and pulls the door shut. Harris, one of the officers assigned to the Northwest detail, walks from his own car to Brown's window. "We'll stay here," says Brown. "You and Sergeant Nolan go and get him out." Harris nods, then walks with Roger Nolan to the front door of the red brick building. The Madison Avenue address is a downtown group home for those charged with delinquency, which in Baltimore means anything up to and including armed robbery and manslaughter. Inside that home is Dennis Wall's younger brother, on whose person is a wristwatch that belonged to Karen Smith. "How do you know he'll still have the watch?" asks Brown as he watches Nolan and the detail officer make their way up the front steps. "I saw him yesterday and he had it then," says Walls. "Thank God," thinks Brown. "Thank God they're so stupid. If they were smart, if they regarded murder as a secret and heinous act, if they told no one, if they got rid of the clothing and the weapons and the possessions taken from the victim, if they refused to listen to bullshit in the interrogation rooms, what the hell would a detective do?" "This has given me a headache," says Walls. Brown nods. "I'm going to need a lift home after we finish with this." A lift home. This kid actually thinks he's going to go home and sleep it off as if it was some kind of hangover. O.B. McCarter, another detail officer from the Southwest, bites his tongue, the driver's seat, trying hard not to laugh. "You think you could give me a lift home?" "We'll see what happens," says Brown. What happens is this. The younger brother of Dennis Walls, a 14-year-old urchin with twice the sense of his sibling, comes out of the group home and is escorted to the side of the Chevrolet. He looks into the car, looks at his brother, looks at Eddie Brown, and manages to assess the situation for what it really is. He nods. "Hey," says Dennis Walls. "Hey," says his brother. "I told them about the watch." "What watch?" "Hey," Brown interrupts. "Your ass is going to be in this if you don't listen to your brother." "Man, come on," says Dennis Walls. "If you give it up, they're going to let me go. If you give it to them. If you don't, they're going to put a murder charge on me." "Hmm," says the kid, obviously wondering how this can be. "If they don't get the evidence, they charge you. But if they get the evidence, you go free." "Yeah, right." "Go on," says Roger Nolan, standing beside the car. The boy looks at his brother. Dennis Walls nods, and the young boy races back to the red brick building, returning 3 minutes later with a woman's timepiece and a black leather band. The boy tries hard to tries to hand the watch to his brother, but Brown interjects his own hand. The boy takes a step away from the car. "See you soon, yo," says Dennis Walls. The boy nods again. They proceed to Reservoir Hill, where the two cars pull to the curb outside the Section 8 housing on Lenox Avenue. Again, Brown and Walls wait at the Cavalier. This time, Nolan pays a visit to Walls' young girlfriend, who received a gift of Karen Smith's gold necklace. In the driver's seat, McCarter plays the radio. Eddie Brown, still in the back seat with his prisoner, watches Nolan bullshitting with the girlfriend's mother in the project parking lot. When Nolan gets wound up, he can talk your ear off. "Come on, Roger," mutters Brown. "What the fuck are you doing there anyway?" A minute or so more, and the girl returns from her apartment with the jewellery, walking across the lot to Nolan, waving nervously at Walls, who is peering at the rear-view passenger window. "Man, I wish she hadn't seen me like this," the detective grunts. "Her mama's going to be upset with me now." McCarter pushes the radio buttons until rock and roll spits out in the crackling AM static. The Bobby Fuller 4 from about a dozen years back. The detail officer listens to the song for a moment. Suddenly he's dying in the front seat, trying hard not to laugh out loud. "Oh man," says McCarter. "Break in rocks in the hot sun." McCarter starts snapping his two fingers, mugging for Brown and Harris, who are standing at the driver's window. "I fought the law, and the law won." Brown steals a look at Walls, but the kid's oblivious. Robbing people with a six-gun. McCarter keeps time in the steering wheel. "I fought the law, and the law won." "Can you believe it?" says Carter. "Believe what?" says Walls. McCarter shakes his head. On the night when his greatest need of functioning mind, Dennis Walls is suddenly struck deaf, dumb, and blind. The radio could be playing back his own confession, and he wouldn't notice. That's the beginning of Chapter 5 of Homicide, A Year on the Killing Streets by David Simon, which I recommend highly. Hope you enjoyed it. Cheers, bye.